You're listening to the first episode of Maiden Flight of the Avenger, a Gearhart novella. I'm your reader, writer, and host, Alex White. This episode features the voice talents of Renee White as Isabel Carriker and Brooke Fox as Valentine Desjardins. If you're listening on iTunes and you haven't had a chance yet, stop by the Gearhart blog and interact at www.thegearhart.com. There you'll find interviews, articles, the Maiden Flight soundtrack, and more. You can also follow me on Twitter, username TheGearHart. And now, settle in, pour a cup of tea, and enjoy as we bring you more tales of the Gearhart. Augustus Ellsworth stared down Charles Patrick. At least, he tried to stare down Charles Patrick. The problem with Chuck was fairly simple. Augustus, a young arcane mechanic of 25 years, stood in Chuck's casino, behind Chuck's guards, who carried Chuck's guns. The mechanic, on the other hand, carried absolutely no weaponry of any kind save for his wit, which wasn't all that sharp. Even if he'd had a gun, he wouldn't be dumb enough to pull it right now. The casino owner was something of a magician. He could make anything and everything disappear. The luxurious high roller's chambers yawned before the mechanic like a great leathery maw, dripping crystal chandeliers from the embossed ceilings. Overwrought, gold-leafed, nude figures adorned the edges of the ceiling and stairways, slithering over embellishments of vines and scrollwork. At each table, dealers in smart tuxedos expertly tossed cards, dice, and chips about, a sort of organized swirl of elite money and prestige that rolled in and out like the tide. In the center of the archway leading inside stood the owner, Chuck. Everything about the man said control. No dust sullied his perfect black suit. Pomade bound his hair together in neatly combed rows of graying stalks. Unstained, white gloves sheathed his hands, and a gleaming, bejeweled wristwatch peeked out from beneath his pressed suit cuff. The glare off the man's shoes dazzled the mechanic almost as much as the crystal wine glass in the casino owner's hand. The six men to the left and right of the club owner had their hands on their hips, bringing their sidearms to the young man's attention. He wanted them to be looking at someone else. Augustus glanced around, hoping for a nearby target that wasn't him. "Mr. Ellsworth," said the gangster, his haughty Edentowner accent grating against the young man's ears. It took a moment for the words to register before Augustus realized he had just been called by name. He did his best to raise an eyebrow, pretending to be confused at the appellation. He motioned to himself, dressed in a suit 2 years out of style, his long brown hair tied into a messy ponytail. Isabel had told him this wouldn't work. She said Chuck would spot him. She said he should never go into public having dressed himself. Augustus wanted her to be wrong so badly, he almost couldn't see straight. He swallowed hard. Wait, was that a tell? Should he have swallowed gently? Did Chuck see his Adam's apple bob nervously? He swallowed again, this time trying to be nonchalant but appear natural. Think natural. That's right. Swallow naturally. Chuck closed his eyes and smiled as though he'd just tasted warm chocolate. What's wrong with your throat, kid?
Sir, said Augustus. Nothing's wrong with it. Just thirsty.
The owner chuckled. His men kept their stony expressions.
You're smart enough to respect your elders, but you're not smart enough to avoid this place.
Well, my ma did say that casinos were for idiots.
Augustus hadn't even closed his mouth before Mayor Leitner passed the group on his way into the High Roller's chambers. He had a gorgeous blonde woman draped on his arm as naturally as one carries a coat. She was not Mrs. Leitner. The mayor exchanged first name pleasantries with Chuck, then passed inside without so much as a blink at the men with firearms who moved to surround the mechanic.
Ho-ho-ho, I see you've got a mouth on you after all,
said the owner, as one of the men inched toward Augustus with a strange mechanical device in his hand. The young man almost turned to run, but his senses spoke to him of the machine's benign nature. Whatever it was, the thing wasn't a weapon. The mechanic didn't realize its true purpose until the guard stood mere inches away from him. The machine could be strapped to an arm and used to throw cards with the flick of a wrist. Before he knew it, the burly man seized Augustus and, with a bit of show, pantomimed ripping the cheating tool from the mechanic's suit jacket sleeve with a shout. Cards spewed forth from the spring mechanism, and all heads in the vicinity turned. They did not see a harmless young man cornered by several guards. The crowd only saw a cheater. Several surprised murmurs and even a few hoots of laughter echoed across the tables as the big fellow hoisted the young man's wrist high into the air.
Ha! Looks like we've got a cheater, announced Chuck with a wry grin playing over his mouth.
A quick survey told Augustus the crowd was not on his side, and the guard's iron grip seemed unlikely to falter anytime soon. The young man relaxed his body, but his heart thundered in his chest. The cadre of men closed about him as his arm was wrenched painfully behind his back. He allowed himself to be led away, not wanting to give Chuck any reason to shoot him publicly. For such a nice exterior, the warehouse lacked any of the casino's charm. They'd thrown him through hallway after hallway, downstairs and around serpentine passages, until they finally came to the place where Augustus imagined Charles Patrick tortured and killed people. Miscellaneous crates had been stacked high along the walls, which probably muffled the sounds of beatings. A single light hung down from the ceiling, its naked bulb chirping as moths bounced against its surface. Two chairs occupied the center of the room, as though the light was a spotlight for the world's smallest stage. The men shoved Augustus into one, and Chuck took his seat in the other. The goons had drawn their guns. The mechanic knew he needed to get information. He might get out of here alive, and his captor looked to be in a talking mood.
How did you spot me?
Pretty simple, really. When you see a rat in a crowd of cats, he tends to stand out.
What does that mean?
It means you're dressed like a chump and you're wearing that stupid seeker ring.
The words seeker ring crashed into Augustus's ears like a bus. Chuck's acidic laugh splashed against the rafters of the room before settling back on the man in front of the mechanic. He pointed at his prisoner.
Look at his face. Hey, kid, you can play poker with me anytime.
I don't try to deny it, Gus. I got you fair and square.
Augustus gripped the arms of his seat. If Chuck knew this much, surely he'd know the mechanic had come to steal the stone sprite. If he knew that, well, the man's merciless reputation preceded him. Six men inhabited the room, and Chuck made seven. Maybe Augustus could make a break for it and use his magic to lock the door behind him. He scooted to the edge of his seat, doing his best to appear stationary.
"Mr. Patrick, I can assure you..."
"Cool your heels, hotshot," said Chuck, and the nearest man hefted his beefy hand onto Augustus's shoulder.
"I'm not going to hurt you, I just want to talk." The gangster then motioned to a man near the door and ordered two warm whiskeys, neat.
"Bring us some food," he added. "Something good. You like steak, kid? Two steaks, big and bloody with a sear."
Augustus could feel his cheeks tense as his eyes narrowed. He knew he looked totally confused, but he ceased to trouble himself with appearances.
"What are you doing, sir?"
"Call me Chuck, and I'm doing business. It's something your little order knows more about than you think. You think you're the first seeker I've ever seen?"
"You can't possibly think I'm going to tell you anything about the seekers. I don't care how much money you have."
Chuck leaned back and took one of the crystal tumblers from the waiter who'd just arrived with the drinks. The man brought Augustus his drink as well, and the mechanic held it in his hand without taking a single sip.
"You ought to try it, sport," said Patrick, bringing the glass to his lips and savoring a draw.
He shook his head slowly as he swallowed.
"Nice and smoky, the way an Ingegard quarter ought to be."
"Ignore me if you want, but I'm not telling you anything."
"I need your secrets about as much as a duck needs a pair of spats, genius. What I want is your money."
If Augustus appeared confused before, he looked downright clueless now.
"Money, Mr. Patrick. Chuck, I don't have two coins to rub together."
"I could tell from the way your mother dresses you. Your order does, though. They got plenty. Now cut the bouchwash and tell me what you came in here to steal."
"Why would I do that?"
Chuck downed his whiskey in one gulp and demanded another from the man by the door.
"Two reasons. Number one, you like me, and you want me to like you because I'm such a likable guy."
The mechanic's eyebrows arched, and he pretended to think it over. Chuck fished out two cigarettes and offered one to Augustus. The mechanic politely held up a hand in refusal, and the casino owner passed the second smoke to his guard. They both lit up, and Chuck took an exceptionally long drag and snapped his windproof lighter shut.
"Number two, everything is for sale, kiddo," he said after the brief respite. "You, me, and everything else in this whole stinking world. I run a business, not a charity, and all you have to do is tell me what you want. Then we're going to work together to make that happen. You get me?"
"I want the stone sprite," said Augustus, breaking his mission. Divulging classified information to an enemy agent was near treason. It didn't matter, though. Chuck almost certainly knew what he had come for. If the mechanic could purchase the device, he would leave it to the officiates and the station chiefs about what to do next.
"What did I tell you, Maury? Didn't I tell you when we bought that hunk of junk that they were going to come looking for it? I said, this piece of crap looks like the Seekers would want it."
"That you did, boss," said one of the men.
"Well, I do want it," said Augustus, shifting in his seat a little.
"Out of your league, sport."
Then Chuck told Augustus how much someone else was paying. The asking price was about 10 years' worth of the mechanic's stipend. He tried not to flinch.
"I can beat that price."
Laughter answered him. Augustus stood up, and all the pistols in the room followed. Chuck quickly raised his hand to signal that it was all right, and his goons relaxed a bit.
"You can't beat that price," said the gangster. "Not in a million years, not with a million seekers."
"I can."
"By the end of next month, 'cause that's when I'm selling it."
"I got a job that can give me that money. Will you sell it to me then?"
"You're gonna knock over a few banks, Ellsworth?"
Augustus wasn't bluffing. He did know of a job that paid enough to pick up the tab on the sprite. Chuck would certainly know it too. The mechanic took a deep breath and looked the other man in the eye, trying to appear as confident as possible.
"I'm gonna enter the cliffside Aeroprix in Moreau."
Augustus had only ever flown a cargo plane, but that wouldn't be enough to prepare him for the Aeroprix. Only about 20 pilots entered the Aeroprix every year, and of those 20, only about 12 went home. Some of the world's best designers, pilots, and mercenaries flew that circuit, and to simply finish was an honor. Winning was another story entirely. and it typically required lightning reflexes, loads of experience, and of course, questionable ethics. The gangster leered. You can enter, but you aren't going to win. Everybody knows that's my race. Charles Patrick and his crack team of racers had taken the Palme d'Aeroprix every year for the past 5 years. Perhaps that fact brought the race to Augustus's mind in the first place. Chuck almost lost it last year when bullet holes were discovered in the fuselage of one of the wrecked contenders, but the evidence disappeared and all the judges claimed they were eager to move on. For some reason he couldn't fathom, Augustus replied, Not this time, Chucky boy. No way, no how, that cup is mine. You ought to watch your mouth if you want to make it to the race, friend. An uncharacteristic ball of fire rose in Augustus's gut. Schematics and designs coursed through his mind, a waterfall of points of data. He could win this. He would win this. You won't hurt me, Mr. Patrick. That a fact, kid. If you do, you'll never get to see me blow past you in the Aeroprix. Chuck stared hard into the mechanic's eyes, but Augustus held his ground. The casino owner obviously liked a gambler, and the young seeker had just taken a chance. The mobster's lips tightened, then formed a smile. I look forward to painting the caves with your guts. Get him out of here. Augustus blinked. What caves? And then hands were upon him, yanking him to his feet. The goons shoved Augustus away through the door as a waiter bustled past with two mouth-watering plates of bloody steak. The agent wished he'd found out about what other seekers Chuck knew. The last thing he heard Chuck say was, We'll have that steak another time, kiddo. What caves? Augustus nearly shouted into the transmitter. Agent Isabel Carricker of the Fumiston chapter sat next to Augustus, listening in as the mechanic held the receiver to his ear. Their spacious lodgings were nestled in the heart of Uptown Edenton in the Fordham Suites, a front for the seekers of the arcane unknown. The pair had traveled across the country specifically to carry out this mission, and they were backed by the local chapter of Magi.
The judges have asked that the location be changed this year. There are caves on this circuit, Agent Ellsworth.
Came the reply of Agent Valentine Desjardins from the distant land of Moreau. Noise sizzled on the line. The Seekers possessed the only transcontinental audio relay, and its existence was a carefully guarded secret. It took a team of arcane mechanics over a decade to perfect the device, and it never quite worked the same since its deployment. Well, said the mechanic, how much of the circuit is in the caves?
80%.
Augustus, as the acting envoy to supplement the Edenton chapter while their members were otherwise occupied, felt he had done a bad job. He and Isabel hadn't acquired the Stone Sprite. They had failed to utilize the members of the local chapter. Their enemy was aware of their existence, and Augustus had agreed to race against him in one of the deadliest competitions on the planet. Worst of all, there might be a mole in his order. Augustus's stomach growled, suddenly hungry for anything.
What did she say?
Asked Isabel, listening intently. Augustus covered the receiver. 80%, he whispered.
No, you have got to be crazy,
she whispered back, her voice hoarse with emphasis. I can do it.
Don't be stupid.
This is my operation, and it's my call.
Isabel fumed.
It's going to be my operation when you're dead.
Augustus glared at her. It's going to be fine.
Agent Ellsworth,
came the voice on the receiver.
Yeah, I'm here. Look, put us down in the race, Agent Desjardins. We're flying this thing.
The line crackled in agreement.
And what would you like me to declare as the team name?
Augustus thought about it a moment, about Chuck's smug face and the way the gangster had dismissed him out of hand. No sense hiding out. Call us Team Ellsworth. Edenton out. The mechanic clicked the terminate button and ended the call. He let out a long sigh.
He couldn't stop thinking about the deadly twists and turns he would surely face in the Aeropree. If Chuck knew who he was and didn't want him to enter, Augustus might not even make it to Moreau. The stress wound his stomach into a tight ball, and he became desperate for a nice sandwich. His eyes passed over Isabel's scowling face as he turned to get up.
"I don't believe you. You are such a rube,"
she said. "What's not to believe? I have a plan."
"The worst plan I've heard in my life."
"Oh yeah, what's your plan?" Isabel folded her arms and sat back.
"One that doesn't involve entering a dangerous race with a low-life thug, just so you can turn around and pay him with your own hard-earned money."
"Oh, so you don't have a problem if we enter and then we keep the money?"
"You don't really have a full set of wits, do you?"
"Ah, quit your grousing." Augustus harumphed as he stood and grabbed his coat. "You're acting like you're my wife or something."
"More like your mother."
"I'm not going to play this game with you, Isabel. Now you can backpedal all you want, or you can come and get a burger at the diner down the street. Either way, that's where I'm going to be." Isabel chewed on the offer a bit.
"First good plan you've had all day."
"Yeah, and we'll get there. But first, we got to talk to someone."
Gus's plan, and how will he deal with the deadly mobster targeting him? Does he really intend to simply pay off an enemy of the Seekers? Who could possibly help him with such a monumental task? Find out next time on The Gearheart. Is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.org.
This episode of The Gear Heart has been brought to you by Ghosty Toasties brand toasted cereal with a delicious immortal crunch. Looking for a little something to get your spirits up in the morning? Grab a bowl of Ghosty Toasties, the only flakes with real specter nectar. Don't be haunted by hunger, think Ghosty Toasties. And by Captain Haverty's War Zeppelins, gas bags that aren't just full of hot air. Want to invade a country but you don't mind being slow, highly visible, and extremely flammable? Don't die in just any old Zeppelin. Die in a Captain Haverty's War Zeppelin. Now in three models, the Target, the Bullseye, and the Missile Magnet. And lastly, by Maiden Flight of the Avenger, the original score. Just because the show is over doesn't mean the adventure has to end. Pick up a copy for just $6.99 on iTunes, Amazon, or wherever fine MP3s are sold. Maiden Flight of the Avenger, the original score. For a soundscape of delight, think Maiden Flight.